Yeah. Chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive on mic. Just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you guys for tuning in, and welcome to the show. I'm joined here by my co-host, DB Schwartz. How are you doing tonight, man?
Hey, man, just pretty much watching the beginning of the fireworks kind of start, right? I mean, this is the litmus test to see how they do in St. Louis. It's in the middle of the country, right? We're going to see how the National Guard does. Is the National Guard going to follow people that are paying them $1,200 a year for their service, or are they going to be with the people?
We'll see, man. Yeah, that's the scary thing, and we're going to get into that in depth. We're hoping to be joined later on by Dan Johnson of Panda, People Against the NDAA. He's on the ground in Ferguson, and he's supposed to call into the show, hoping that his phone is still working, because apparently we're not sure whether it's just the cell towers being jammed from too much people trying to use their phones and their internet, or if they're actually trying to shut down internet over there or whatever, which I wouldn't be surprised of. The same thing pretty much happened last night. So we're still going to try to get him on the show. We're hoping that he's able to make it in, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But there's some other stuff here that I want to cover before we get into that, because that's probably going to be our main topic of the night, but there is a lot of other stuff going on in the world right now that we do need to touch on at least a little bit before we jump into this Ferguson thing, because there's just so much stuff that we got to really cover everything. Make sure you guys catch us on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We have 3 days a week, and me and DB have been talking about going 5 days a week, maybe, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's enough things going on now that we can easily pull that, and you know, and I encourage everybody to get involved yourself. You know, let's pile on. Let's pretty much drown out these guys that are just corporate talking heads that are leading us to ruin, man. If we continue to follow what the media is telling us, if we continue to listen to the government mouthpiece and actually believe that is reality, we're in ruin, dude. Look at our environment. Look at wars. Look at inequality. It's all caused by the media. Stop listening to them. Start talking to real people.
Yeah, man, this is a perfect example, too. I guess we could touch on this right now before we jump into this other stuff. But the amount of people that are out there in Ferguson live streaming, I was watching Dan Johnson earlier today, and he literally, as he's walking around live streaming in Ferguson, he got three other people that were like, oh, what are you up to? He's like, oh, well, you interested in live streaming? Here's how to do it. Download this app, and boom, within 5 minutes, these people are up and rolling. You know what I mean? It's not that hard, and you know, the main thing is, oh, people are worried about being on camera and stuff. Well, it's not a big deal, you know, I mean, people aren't expecting a amateur live streamer to be a super professional, you know, reporter or anything like that. Anyone can do it. The main thing is to get all this stuff on video, get the documentation done, get it going.
I mean, you don't. What is the difference between professionals and amateurs? It's for the longest time mostly been about equipment and technology. Yeah, of course they got college education. Some of them, many of them have no education at all. So it just comes down to you have a natural talent for, number one, finding the news out and disseminating it from the talking heads, and two, can you analyze it so people can use it in the real world and not be led astray like what's going on right now? And it's perfect, man. As we speak, I'm watching live stream, and it's impressive what's going on. We're really documenting this, and I think it's really, really scaring some important people right now.
Yeah, no doubt, man. And we're going to jump knee-deep into this stuff as the show goes on. First, I want to touch on this first story that I have here, which is pretty impressive. 225 Jewish survivors and descendants of survivors of the Holocaust have now sent a letter in condemning Israel for the atrocities that they're committing against the Palestinians and what they're doing right now in Gaza. And I have an excerpt here from the letter that I'm going to read because it's pretty powerful, man. And it just goes to show that anyone sitting there talking like, oh, well, you know, well, it's the Jews that are to blame and the Jews are doing this and they're doing that, or anyone that says it's the Muslims or anyone that says anything like that, you have to remember there's idiots of every race and there's oligarchs in every government. So whether it's the American government, the Israeli government, the Russian government, the Iranian government, all of them have big-time issues. They all have oligarchs in them. Does that mean that all Iranians are bad? Does that mean that all Muslims are terrorists? Does that mean all the Jews are to blame for bombing Gaza? No. See, that's the problem, that too many people are so quick to just jump to that conclusion that they spread all this racist propaganda and stuff that's completely misled, and it's damaging. It's damaging. It's not good for our relations, because that is exactly what the establishment wants. They want us to jump to these conclusions and blame an entire race or blame an entire nationality or blame an entire religion based on the actions of a few idiots. So we can't let that happen. And this letter here is a perfect example of Jewish people that survived the Holocaust. Now remember, a lot of the time when anyone's criticizing the state of Israel, the Zionist government of Israel, people always tend to invoke as a rebuttal, they want to invoke this whole Holocaust thing and all that. Now this letter right here blows that argument completely out of the water, and I'm going to read this little excerpt here. As Jewish survivors and descendants of survivors of the Nazi genocide, we unequivocally condemn the massacre of Palestinians in Gaza and the ongoing occupation and colonization of historic Palestine. We further condemn the United States for providing Israel with the funding to carry out the attack, and Western states more generally for using their diplomatic muscle to protect Israel from condemnation. Genocide begins with the silence of the world. We are alarmed by the extreme racist dehumanization of Palestinians in Israeli society, which has reached a fever pitch. In Israel, politicians and pundits in the Time of Israel and the Jerusalem Post have called openly for genocide of Palestinians, and right-wing Israelis are adopting neo-Nazi insignia. Furthermore, we are disgusted and outraged by Elie Wiesel's abuse of our history in these pages to promote blatant falsehoods used to justify the unjustifiable. Israel's wholesale effort to destroy Gaza and the murder of nearly 2,000 Palestinians, including many hundreds of children, nothing can justify bombing UN shelters, homes, hospitals, and universities. Nothing can justify depriving people of electricity and water. We must raise our collective voices and use our collective power to bring about an end to all forms of racism, including the ongoing genocide of the Palestinian people. We call for an immediate end to the siege against and the blockade of Gaza. We call for full economic, cultural, and academic boycott of Israel. Never again must mean never again for anyone. And then it's signed, the survivors.
It's the only thing that would make them listen would be money. That's the only thing. If we cut our aid to them, if we kind of blacklisted any corporate dealings with them and it made it hurt to and reeled them in. But you know what? Of course, that's not the goal. I mean, this letter points out perfectly that they serve a purpose. To try to pretend they don't basically serve as our shield over there in the Middle East and keep our oil interests secured by being kind of like the whipping boy in a sense. They get attacked and we can kind of go about business as usual. So to change our relationship with them would be to change our entire geopolitical dynamic, including getting off oil, and then we couldn't stranglehold the world's energy. So you have to understand that's the long-term thing, and that's why things aren't going to change. If we all stopped using oil, that would be a really good start, though, and I think that's kind of starting right now.
Exactly, man. And you know, one of the big things is that this letter was mentioning was this ad buy that this Ellie Wiesel or whatever their name is purchased in all these big New York Times, The Guardian, all these big newspapers. They bought a big ad placement, and it basically invoked the Holocaust. And that they're basically saying here, don't misrepresent our history. Don't try to make excuses for the bombing of Gaza by trying to pull this card that, oh, well, it happened to us, so we got to prevent it again. Yeah, we do got to prevent it. But unfortunately, the state of Israel is one of the countries right now that is perpetuating this kind of thinking, where they are doing horrible things to people just because they are a certain race. You know, and they're trying to purge the Palestinians out of Palestine, you know.
And what do you think is happening in Ferguson? It's class warfare worldwide, and there's connotations at the very tops of leadership everywhere. And you know, if there's a middle class that's dwindling now, there's going to be a line drawn in the sand. And I'm watching this stuff right now, Nick, as we're talking. I mean, they're pulling out the MRAP, and they got the big guns out there, and they're, you know, there's journalists galore out there, and it's not going to deter these guys. And it's, are we going to allow that? Are we going to take it? Are people from communities around Ferguson going to sit there? Because if it's there, it's not going to stop. It's just going to spread. Are you going to be okay in a middle-class community with that taking place for your protection? Are you okay with giving up all your rights and being in a militarized police state? And it's going to be much more than you think it is. In Israel, it's commonplace for there to be drones all the time in the sky to protect the citizenry, and they're okay with that. Are we going to be okay with that?
Well, we better get used to it, because it's already here, man.
Or stop it, or realize what it becomes, because if they have total control over you, they implement a plan to disarm you, and they come with a bunch of scary guys with guns to your house and take your guns, and then there's some kind of a crisis where you have nothing left but just go into one of these camps, then that's what they get to do, man. And you can draw any kind of parallel to any regime in the past that when these setups and these situations take place, that it's inevitable what happens to the civilian population afterwards. They are really, really dramatically reduced in number.
Now, you remember a few months ago there was a drone that crashed here off the coast of San Diego. And it was like a $16 million drone. They say it was for surveillance of the border, which we know is probably pretty much not true. And one of our guys that helps us here at the Anti-Media, he helps with our social media and our Instagram and all that stuff. Leo, good, great friend of mine, he saw a drone the other day flying over San Diego, a big one, the Predator, without the, you know, it wasn't armed, but it was a Predator surveillance drone, and it was flying over the southern side of San Diego.
Well, they're stealth.
It was
armed.
Right there.
They actually are armed. They have the microgauss, so they have the little 6 times the speed of a bullet, that thing that shoots those things on a rail. They have them in there. There's just no Hellfire. So yeah, it can take anybody out anywhere, anytime. They're not authorized yet to do that within the country.
So it's already here, man. I mean, we already got drones flying. The Gaza mind state is already pretty much here. I went down to Tijuana the other day, and it really is like Gaza down there, man. It's no joke. And they got the wall there, and it's completely repressive, and they don't let people cross over, even though most of these people are victim of our economic policies and our like the NAFTA agreement, the TPP that's coming up here soon, and of course the big elephant in the room, the drug war, which has completely destroyed any sense of security down in Mexico. Nobody's safe down there because of this drug war stuff. If drugs were completely legal, guess what? They'd have a burgeoning economy, a burgeoning drug trade. You know, and they'd be able to do it legally, and they'd be able to legally traffic cocaine and marijuana and whatever else it is that they bring. Because, obviously, the drug war has failed. Now, I don't think it's a good idea to be using all these drugs, and, I mean, of course, marijuana is another story.
Well, if they're done in a clinical setting, then, where you can't hurt yourself or others, like they've been doing in Europe forever for the curious, for the curious-minded, where you can go be studied and use whatever drugs you want. And those things, those options are available, man. If they're in a controlled setting, it's fine. Go do all the heroin you'd like with doctors on hand. They'll study you and see what happens. And you can go, hey, one time I rode the dragon, man. And it was awesome. And you'll get the experience. I mean, trust me, the harder drugs, when people become addicted to the hard drugs, really, it's just due to them pretty much for the most part doing really inferior stuff and having to do so much of it. That they need more and more and more, and that's by design. You know, so we can argue day and night about the social problems that come from drugs and illicit drug use, but, you know, in countries like Portugal where marijuana is legal and less hard drugs like cocaine and like MDMA are legal, or a misdemeanor at most, they don't have the issue. So it's all societal.
All right, I think we may have been getting a call in from Dan, but I'm not sure because I think we may have missed the connection here. Let me see if we can get him to call back in here because we need to get this account from the ground down in Ferguson. We'll see if we can get him to come back in. But if not, we'll continue. So, you know, we're already seeing this kind of us versus them mind state, and of course it's rearing its ugly head over in Ferguson, like we were talking about. But before we go into that, I want to get a little bit more into this whole Gaza thing because, you know, unfortunately, it looks like if there is some kind of peace treaty that goes on over there, nothing is really going to change because what the Palestinians and the people in the Gaza Strip really need is to have this embargo lifted and this blockade lifted so that they can have free economic trade. And then people that want to help them out, because there's millions and millions of people around the world that want to help these people, then they could send aid, they could send food, they can send farming tools and whatever it is that they need over there to better their lives, you know, equipment to filter water and all that stuff. Right now, that stuff is almost impossible to get in there. You remember what happened when those two flotillas of humanitarian aid got blocked by the Israelis and they boarded the boat and arrested everybody on board, took the boat, you know? The food that goes into the Gaza Strip is completely rationed off.
Well, it's weaponized.
People are only allowed to get, like, what is 14, it?
It's 1,400 calories a day.
1,400 calories a day, and we're supposed to have about 2,000.
Well, yeah, okay, that's for healthy function. So
everyone there is malnutritioned, basically.
Yes.
So, you know, that's the main thing, is to demilitarize their borders and allow them to trade and allow them to receive goods. And it does not look like Israel's going to allow that to happen. So even if they do come to some sort of ceasefire, it's going to be short-lived. Eventually, Hamas is going to start shooting rockets again because people are just so tired of it over there that they're willing to shoot rockets just because they're trying to bring attention to what's going on, even though the rockets don't hardly ever kill anybody or hit anything. They're trying to raise the awareness, you know, and we don't condone that. Violence is never good. Shooting rockets is horrible. But, you know, when you radicalize a population like that, what else do you expect? You know, and just the radicalization is going on everywhere. Because guess what? The U.S. Is not the only place with a struggling economy. Palestine is not the only place with a struggling economy. All of Europe is struggling. All of North America is struggling. South America is struggling. I mean, even if you look at these emerging economies like Brazil, we saw what happened during the World Cup. I mean, they destroyed all those favelas and all that stuff. There's a huge underclass over there, that people that are oppressed and hardly have any rights, you know. And we know even in this country, money buys rights. If you don't got money, then guess what? There's a good chance you're going to be victim of the war on drugs, or you're going to be victim of the justice system or whatever.
And imagine a country with $30 trillion of natural resources. That's the estimate for Brazil. And 165 million people. I mean, they should have a near to a first world, if not first world, living standards. So nothing's being shared at all. And it's all sustainable, by the way. They could make massive hydropower, massive any kind of power you could think of, and then crops galore. So plus the rainforest itself is an Eden. So you get to see what happens when crony capitalism gets to the extremes in Latin America. If there's drugs involved, you get Mexico. And then if there's drugs and massive natural resources involved, you get Brazil, which is, man, that's the police state galore. I mean, you're talking about they were using drones on guys to hit them when they're clearing out the favelas, dude. And that wasn't really talked about too much, but, you know, that's where it's at there.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's just... You know, it's just a huge problem. It's global, and this is what most of our struggles in the world, and we've talked about this before, is based on economic insecurity. Most racism, most conflicts, most reasons why people blow stuff up and kill people is because they are fighting for resources, and they're fighting for an economic viability, basically. And we talked about this in our last show, about these guys that were blocking the buses of these kids that were coming up from Central America over in Marietta. And the reason why they're so upset, well, it's because they probably lost their houses in the housing crash, their wages never recovered during the recession, and they're looking for a scapegoat. And it's a lot more convenient to see a bunch of people coming up from Central America and blame it on them, because you could actually see those people. And it's a lot harder for people to get a grip on what's actually causing all these problems, which is the central banking cartels, the Federal Reserve, and all this Wall Street stuff, which is all invisible to the average guy. You don't get to see that stuff. You just get to see watch the news at night and say, oh, the stock market went up or the stock market went down.
People need to understand that it's been proven that Wall Street directly finances almost any illegal activity in the world in one form or fashion or another. The Vatican also has been proven to do these things. So you're right, Nick. Central banks, which are too big to fail and too big to prosecute and pretty much are their own little fiefdoms, are one of the tentacles of this root of evil, dude. And when people get the gist of it, they start wanting to move their banks, bank money around and get away from these huge, these maniac companies, man. I mean, these places have already bankrupted millions of people's 401ks and made them have to continue working. How many 70-year-olds are working still because of these horrible, horrible institutions?
I can't even say, man. There's just so many. And that really is at the root of a lot of our problems. And guess what? Our foreign policy, which is in many ways very symbolic of what's going on between Israel and Gaza, because we fund Israel to the tune of at least $3 billion a year, and that's what's on the books. It's probably a lot. It's probably much higher than that when it comes down to it, with all the black ops and the funding for the Iron Dome and the counterintelligence stuff, the CIA working with the Mossad, all that stuff. Who knows what the real budget is, you know?
Did you see now what they're using, because Iron Dome wasn't like 100% effective? Is they had this circling Boeing that was like using the energy particle beams to shoot down the rockets, and then they started kind of trailing them back to the batteries themselves. I don't know if there's a few pictures of them using an energy beam. And this has been developed since the 80s by us through Star Wars and the Reagan years. And now it's finally got an opportunity to be used in a defensive capacity, but so while we're in the area, we shot a beam down on the ground too. It's less collateral damage. This is Star Wars. This is the future right now. The science fiction future of the 50s and 60s. It's about to unravel itself.
I mean, who knows what the end goal is. I did see a few reports of that weapon you're talking about. I couldn't tell if it was completely credible or not, but it's definitely something to look into, in my opinion, anyway. But this kind of rolls us right into what's going on now over in Iraq, and this is one thing that we can't forget about, and I just want to touch on this here before we jump into this Ferguson stuff head first. What is going on in Iraq? I guess we can say we got lied to. First of all, the government sat there and lied to us and said that they were going to go first for humanitarian purposes to rescue these guys on this mountain, which is kind of somewhat of a noble cause and all that stuff, but that was a complete lie. In fact, when the Americans finally did get on that mountain, looks like there's not as many people up here as we thought there were. Oops. And I mean, that literally was on the front page of Washington Post a few days ago. I couldn't believe it. I was just like, wow, okay. And nobody in the media is calling them on it, of course. Secondly, if you look at where the locations were of U.S. airstrikes, they were in Erbil, which is, guess what? The oil hub of the Kurdish area. And how much oil does the Kurdish area have? If Kurdistan were to break off away from Iraq, they'd be the ninth largest oil producer in the world. Okay, so first of all, let's get our facts straight. We're not there for humanitarian purposes. We're there to protect the oil. That's just right off the bat. Secondly, now we got this new prime minister sweeping into Iraq. I don't know who he is, but what we do know is that he's unelected. He's a bureaucrat. He's hand-chosen by us, obviously, and whoever else has chips on the board over there. They say, okay, yeah, let's take this guy. He's in no way representative of the people. He hasn't been elected. He hasn't been voted for. He's handpicked. He was part of the former prime minister's cabinet, which means that he wasn't elected in the first place. So this guy is basically who knows what, probably just another puppet, and now he's in charge of Iraq, basically. And now we're about to start flooding them with weapons to fight against ISIS, who, if you look back at the beginnings of ISIS, we helped train them, we helped finance them and fund them through in Syria to fight against Assad. And once again, our foreign policy comes back and is used against us, just like it was in the case of bin Laden, just like it was in the case of Saddam Hussein. So it's nothing new here, same old thing, they lie to get us in. Now, the other thing they said was that they were going to be protecting U.S. Personnel over there in Iraq, which to this date hasn't been the case. Now they're bombing around this dam that they're trying to help the Kurds take back. Now, don't get me wrong. ISIS is horrible. I hope the Kurds win. But the fact is that they just simply blatantly lied to us about why they were going in there, and that is not cool.
And also it's telling, too, that Obama's pretty much made this directive that anything having to do with Israel and arms going into Israel would have to get his approval, and he's been vetoing everything. So we haven't been arming Israel at all since basically the 15th, which is when this took effect. And it's to ensure the ceasefire remains so that they, you know, don't waste munitions and stuff, especially with ISIS around. Because let's face it, this has been a PR disaster. There's only the most brainwashed of people that wholly support Israel. There's many people on the fence, and most people can patently agree that 2,000 civilians dying for any reason is awful, and that they're continuing to suffer there because everything is, like you said, partitioned off and restricted to the barest amount. They have no energy. Still, because the power plant was blown to smithereens. And will they let them get, you know, solar panels in for lighting? Because they would make so much power with the solar plant. Nope. Can't let them have that technology. Got to keep them completely dependent. And it's just, it's never going to work as a two-party state if one state's surrounding one. There's only a few countries in the world that are surrounded by another country. And they're like, they're not in places of turmoil like that is. So they're going to have to come up with some real solution and not a genocidal one, or else Israel really will probably be attacked again, a la 1967.
Now, we got to give it to the Kurds for going in and rescuing these Yazidis. They did a great job, and apparently they took them out through Syria. And, you know, you got to feel for the Kurds because these people have been oppressed by almost everybody. I mean, what, Saddam Hussein gassed them. Assad can't stand them. They're getting oppressed over in Turkey. I mean,
Erdogan hates these guys. He attacked them with Apaches we gave them. And now, surprise, surprise, they're now a convenient ally for us to disseminate chaos in the region. And Turkey sure doesn't like it. Now, Turkey's not really a happy NATO customer. So it's the turmoil and the solution out of the chaos they're trying to get. And it's just all part of the game.
Yeah, man. And you know, these poor Kurds, man, they've been screwed over for so long by all these different governments. They've never had their own state, at least not recently. And that's why when I sit here and look at this situation in Iraq, Justin King did an article on this about how ISIS is actually starting to bring together these factions in Iraq. Now, don't get me wrong, the regime that's, you know, the official regime in Iraq right now is a total puppet of the U.S., and they work closely with Iran, and so, I mean, it just goes to show that most of this rhetoric that we see coming out of the right-wing media about how Iran is the devil and stuff, it's all just moving out of the mouth and nothing real. I mean, these guys are covertly working together in Iraq right now. But I think, you know, these Kurdish guys deserve their own territory, man. And I hope that this is the opportunity that gives it to them. But here's the other thing, is that this is bringing together the organic movements in Iraq, which are the Shias and the Christian minorities and the Yazidis and the Kurds. And they're actually all working together right now to fight off these ISIS guys. Because they all know that the ISIS dudes are way, way too extreme. Nobody wants to live under what these guys are trying to sell. So they're actually coming together, and this may be a unifying moment for these people. Now, here's the thing. Anything that the U.S. goes in and does, it's going to undermine that unity, because all it's going to do is give more recruiting power to ISIS, because ISIS is now able to say, oh, see, look, we're fighting against America. You guys should come join us. All you young kids that hate America because America's been bombing your country for 15, 20, 30 years, come join our ranks. We'll help you out. We'll promise you women. We'll promise you gold and glory and all this other stuff, you know? So, I mean, it's something that we can... Hey, you there, man? Hold on. I'm having...
Yep. No problem. I'm thinking Dan may be trying to call in.
Yeah. I'm trying to get him added into this call here. It's actually Cassius. He wants to talk about what's going on up in Seattle right now because they got a bunch of good activism stuff going on.
All right.
And I'm trying to add these calls, but I can't right now. So we're going to have to go ahead and go on without any calls tonight, unfortunately. So because I... don't think, because we just had to upgrade Skype, so it's just something that I don't know how to exactly use yet. Skype forced everybody to upgrade, but anything that we do over there in Iraq is going to undermine any organic advancement that these people can make, like legitimate progress and getting a legitimate government that's actually elected and that's not propped up by us. Now, is that in our government's interest? No, not really. Because if there was actually a representative government in Iraq, guess what they'd do? They'd probably nationalize the oil, and then all those people in Iraq would benefit from the oil trade, and they'd boot out all the corporations just like Iran did. And that's why for so long we propped up Saddam Hussein until Saddam Hussein started playing around with our oil, and then we kicked him out, killed him, and then we put in this new government, you know, and so that's not going to fly. So unfortunately for Iraq's future, as long as the U.S. government is the major player over there, that's backing and supplying the weaponry and propping up the government and all that stuff, then guess what? These people are forever going to be oppressed, and the corporate ruling class is going to be siphoning away all of their wealth and all of their resources, very similarly to how they've done to, guess who? The U.S. middle class. That's what, the same thing they've done to us is what they've been doing to all these other countries for decades.
Yeah, it was all just practice till it came home to roost, till they knew the economy would start to implode because of the Ponzi scheme fiat system. And the bells has rung and the tolls here. The bill is here. And the bill says that we're going to drop to a third world living standard very soon for most. It'll be similar to a depression again for people that are unprepared. It'll be possibly catastrophic. And the only way to control it and to keep the elites protected is to have the militarized police state. And that's it. That's all it is. It's as simple as that. To prevent that, to prevent our own supposed law enforcement from basically using lethal violence against us, we need to come out in force before they can collapse the economy. When I say force, I mean let it be heard, man. Talk about it. Tell 10 people. They'll tell 10 more. And let people watch these live streams. I posted a live stream up. I'm sure no one will comment, but hopefully a few people are watching what's going on. And, you know, when this comes to your town, understand what it is. Watch what Gaza is. Get yourself a gas mask, for real. Get a way to protect yourself, because they'll use the same tactics, because they'll prove to be successful until we stop it. Once we stop it, we can maybe take our country back.
Yeah, and here's one point that we made a while back. I think it was last week, probably last Monday, about how many police departments have responded in Ferguson. Last time I checked, they had 25 different police departments in Ferguson. Then they brought in the Highway Patrol, and now they're bringing in the National Guard. So we're talking about a town, and don't get this wrong. This is a town. This isn't St. Louis where you got, I don't know, a million people. This is a town of 20,000 people only. This is a small town, much smaller than where I live.
Right. It's a suburb. It's kind of like an older suburb, you know, and now it's kind of more run down. But it's still it's central. It's a nice area geographically, but you know, it's just, this is class warfare. It's classical class warfare. You know, if Mike Brown robbed a guy by choking him and then had gotten shot by the cop on scene, that would be a totally different thing than what kind of happened and the way it played out. And then the way the handling of the body went and the reaction to any show of solidarity in the community. It's scary, man, when you're outnumbered 1,000 to 1. And people are kind of tired of you doing what you've been doing every day.
Exactly. Now, these guys are massive. These cops are massively outnumbered. Like I said, they had to bring in 25 police departments. And they had to bring in the Highway Patrol. Then they had to bring in the damn National Guard today. And we're talking about a little small town of 20,000 people. And this is the reaction that they had. Now, if all of St. Louis were to start rising up and all the suburbs around St. Louis started rising up, guess what? There'd be no stopping it. There would be absolutely no stopping it. And they can go in, and if there was enough people doing it, we'd be able to go and take down the Federal Reserve, throw all these guys in prison, take Congress out, throw Congress in prison, arrest Obama and all of his cabinet. I mean, we'd be able to do that kind of thing.
Well, a start would be getting the Ferguson chief of police gone right away, getting everybody that was involved gone right away. I mean, I'm watching this live stream now, and these guys now have the SWAT in with guns, real guns, and they're going kind of a little bit crazy right now. And hopefully they have rubber bullets, man, because just watching this live stream, it's intense, dude. It's very intense. So, you know, Missouri is not an unarmed state, and I'm sure people in that community are well armed. And it could get as ugly as they want it to get, but these guys have to understand that they're 50 or 60,000 a year. What they're doing, it's going to be on the wrong side of history unless something catastrophic happens, and then their own families are going to die too. That's what I don't understand. These guys doing their jobs with so much fervor. You know, they still don't get it. That if they really do clamp down on us, their own families are going to end up like us.
Yeah, man, and sooner or later they're going to realize that they're part of the oppressed middle class, and they're part of the group that's getting their retirement raided. They're part of the group that's not going to have a pension when they retire, because, you know, all these cops are supposed to get a pension and all that stuff. Yeah. We all know what's going on with the pensions right now. We
see they're raiding.
Yeah, I mean, look at Detroit. Detroit, their pension is completely, yeah.
What are these cops doing this for? I mean, just to have a decent life now, but, you know, these guys could form a militia that we would pay for with our taxes, and they could rearrange it by forming their own thing and answering to us and going to City Hall and throwing out the mayor and getting the whole from the top up reinstated and doing the jobs I know they really want to do. I know most of them don't even want to be doing what they're doing. I can see it from this video. They're real hesitant to go out there and do this.
Yeah, and they're not thinking ahead. They're just not thinking ahead, man. Because their future is going to look a lot like ours, and their pensions are not going to be there to pay them. And when their pensions fail, they're going to try to get Social Security. Guess what? That's failing as well. All these quote-unquote investments in public workers have all been raided to pay for these wars in Iraq and all this other crap, all this other horrible foreign policy that we've been marauding around the world for the past 70 years conducting for basically no reason, because almost all of it has been a failure, except for, I mean, maybe you can say the Korean War was a win, but still, it really didn't change anything. Look at China. China is still the rising greatest power in the world, and they're the biggest threat. We didn't contain China.
Well, yeah, we did, but it's long-term because of Monsanto's destroyed their food supply, and they know it, and they're going to have a big problem soon. So, yeah, we did. We contained them. We made a trade balance with them, food for the dead or something to that nature, or they're going to get some of our solar infrastructure as return for our debt. But, I mean, otherwise, at some point we're going to try to fight somebody just to kind of get the economy back going. I think that seems to be what they want to do after it crashes, and I don't think China's going to play ball, and I don't think Russia's going to either. So the only people left are us, right?
Yep. Now, I want to read an excerpt out of this Reason article, which was about this poll that they conducted. And this poll is about a year and a half, 2 years old. So keep in mind that this is before all this stuff kicked off in Ferguson. So from what I can see and tell, the numbers are probably much, much higher right now. Here it is. Americans, it seems, have had enough of police militarization, with the latest Reason Roop poll finding a full 58% of respondents believing that the use of drones, military weapons, and armored vehicles by local police department is already going too far. That includes a full 60% of both Democrats and Tea Party Republicans. Opposition is under 50% among non-Tea Party Republicans. So this poll doesn't even mention the fact that young people are probably about 90% against police militarization, and independents are probably about 75% against militarization. And keep in mind, this is a year and a half, 2 year old poll. Now, a year and a half, 2 years ago, I had just become an admin of Cop Block Facebook page, and we had about 35,000 fans, and that number is up to about 1 million at this point. So the numbers are surging. And now with this stuff going on in Ferguson, last week there was like 3 days in a row where the hashtag police state was actually trending. I mean, people are talking about this at an unprecedented rate. And this to me is positive news. And I'd like to see a new poll on police militarization, because now the opposition is probably well over 60%. It's probably up to 70 by now, maybe even higher. So the people already understand that this is not working out. We do not want police militarization. Our journalist at the Anti-Media, Justin King, wrote a few exposés on the MRAP that this small local town in Florida got, rural Florida, where there's basically zero crime. And this sheriff got an MRAP and all this other stuff. And a bunch of people in the community were outraged. And they did a local poll. And the local opposition was upwards of 75-78% opposition to this MRAP and all this stuff. So the people just aren't having it. But it is a symptom of the larger problem of the oligarchy that we live in, because guess what? It doesn't matter if 60% of both Democrats and Tea Partiers and even 50% of Republicans are opposed to it. That, none of that even matters to these politicians because they don't listen to us. That's exactly what that Stanford study was about. The politicians do not listen to us. We are in an oligarchy. The money talks, and everything else is all bullshit for these people.
Well, we got to make recalls prevalent. We got to start bringing them in right away, and we got to air our dirty laundry. And it's got to be done in a way that's kind of almost passe, because a lot of people don't want to be bothered with politics, but you got to make it easy. Like in Italy, what they'll do, and it's worked forever, although they're corrupt in their own ways, everybody's involved in the scandals, and then people vote them out. And here we turn a blind eye for whatever reason. Why? Is it too hard to get a recall going? It just needs to happen. When they do something we don't want, just boot them out and get a guy in that'll overturn that and then put something in we want. And we have to be vigilant about it, and I know that's tough. But when will it be at a point when people realize their life's becoming worse and they're working harder because of people making decisions for them that don't care about them? That's what it really boils down to.
Yeah, man. And now the stuff that's going on in Ferguson, one of the things that was truly, truly disturbing to me is how the press is being treated. The press is being treated like absolute shit in Ferguson. There was a video that went viral, came out, I don't know, 3 or 4 days ago, how there was some Al Jazeera journalists there on the ground with their all their equipment set up, getting ready to do a report. And the cops over there just started firing. At first they started firing rubber bullets at them, and they're dodging rubber bullets. One guy got hit, and then they fire the tear gas. And these guys are sitting there with a $50,000 camera, a bunch of equipment, getting ready to do a report, and then the tear gas comes in. And you see the guy, one of the guys that was one of their, helpers that was setting up the camera, he tried to stand there and try to, kind of like brush off the fact that the smoke grenade or the tear gas was going off right next to him. And then it hits him, and he's like, oh, shit. And you see him just cover his mouth with his shirt and go running, because that stuff is no joke.
Right.
That's chemical warfare, right? I mean, that is technically a chemical weapon,
right.
And that's what that is. And there's been I don't know how many journalists arrested, and then this video broke last night about a cop, and I was going to play the audio today, but I didn't have enough time to pull it up. But this cop basically threatened this guy that he was going to shoot him in the face with his gun if he didn't turn off his light. Because he had a light on, because he was going to do a report, and he told him, "If you don't shut that off, I'm going to shoot you in the face with this thing." And he pointed his gun at him, right in his head. You know what I mean? And it's just something that's so terrifying, and it's telling that we're getting so close to this full on police state. And I got this quote here from William E. Bora that I want to read, and basically it goes like this. Without an unfettered press, without liberty of speech, all of the outward forms and structures of free institutions are a sham, a pretense, the sheerest mockery. If the press is not free, if speech is not independent and untrammeled, if the mind is shackled or made impotent through fear, it makes no difference under what form of government you live, you are a subject and not a citizen. And it makes perfect sense, because all this stuff that they're doing to these journalists, I don't think it's by accident. I think that they're trying to send a message, and they're trying to say, hey, mother effers, don't get in our way. This isn't here for you guys to be reporting on. This is here for us to be trampling on these people's rights. And it's like these cops are getting a thrill out of this, man. You should have heard this guy on this video. I wish I could play it. The other thing was the audio was like really mashed up. It was really not very clear. It was hard to understand what he was saying. But the guy sounded like he was just drunk on power. He sounded like he was drunk on power, man. And it was absolutely horrifying that he would point a gun at a guy's face and say, hey, turn that light off. I'm going to blast you in the face with this thing. You know, and what they're doing is a chilling effect. And it's just like what Edward Snowden talked about about all this NSA stuff and how the NSA is you know, putting a dragnet down and collecting all of our communications. It's a chilling effect. It may not be the straight up effect. Okay, yeah, you got my selfies. Okay, you know, whatever. That's not the big deal. The big deal is it makes you think twice before you want to say anything controversial. It makes journalists think twice before they want to go out and cover something controversial because they don't know if they're going to get maced, shot in the face, hit with a rubber bullet, or if they're going to get tear gas thrown at them. You know, and it's this chilling effect that is the precursor to these guys really putting the clamp down, and it's the same thing that they did in Nazi Germany. They made everybody afraid of their neighbor. They made everybody afraid of the Jews. They made everybody afraid of speaking out.
Except guess what it's doing to the people that hadn't grown up on television, like me and you, and everyone younger. We're getting really fucking immune and really fucking tired. And I hate to curse like that, you know, it being a Monday, but it's getting played out, and it's old, and it makes me want to just drop out of this whole system and rat race and move off grid completely and as much as I can, and maybe even somewhere a little more stable and a little less evil. You know, it's made me rethink everything about my position in the world and what this country really is and what we've allowed it to become. And do we take it back? Yeah, we're gonna have to. And I think everybody's kind of understanding it's going to be a consciousness shift. It's not going to need to be violent. Nobody wants to play this game anymore with these people. We want a fair shot. And with open sourcing and the things coming out right now where we can get off of their systems, and we can do it with a quickness and cheaply. If enough people crowdsourced, we could be off the grid making food and water yesterday. And then when that's done, if you lose your job or something like that and you have no money coming in, you're not going to starve. You're still going to be able to eat and drink, and you can find another job. You're not going to be at the whim of unemployment or food stamps or anything like that. That's where we all want to get to. Little micro farms inside and things like that, and they're all feasible and attainable.
Yeah, man, and you know, the only chance these people have, because if you look back, and there's that famous quote that says, you know, war is old men talking and young men dying. Who's going to get out and fight? Is it going to be these brainwashed dudes that are 60-plus years old that watch Fox News? Because, you know, there was that there were the numbers I pulled out from, I think it was Pew Research or one of these polling companies, where they were trying to find out who watches TV and what channel they watch. Well, guess what? The median age of a person that watches Fox News is like 68 years old. And the median age of CNN was like 58, and MSNBC was like 59. And Bill O'Reilly was 72. 72-year-old people, that's the median age of people that watch that show. Are these guys going to be out in the street fighting when things actually come down to it? No. These guys are going to be relying on their children and their grandchildren to say, hey, keep me safe, guys. Well, guess
what? They're totally reliant on a pension system, most of them, be it Social Security, 401k, or whatever. That it's a good chance, if it's attached to the stock market, that it's going to have a crash and a collapse, and they're not going to be able to survive on whatever dividends come out of that every month. And you're right, Nick. They're going to have to rely on their children, the baby boomer generation, or a little slightly younger than that, people in their 40s and 50s, who are really the last remnants of the TV generation. I would say anybody under like 40 is an avid internet user and has been, and now gets a variety of sources and knows what's really going on because we can watch it in real time, not in this edited corporate, regurgitation. And it's going to change everything, and it is changing everything. I'm watching it live now. I know what's going on, and whatever they try to tell me happened, I know. I can see the intimidation factor, like you're saying, Nick. These guys with their superiority complex and their armor and their batons and their rem wraps and their looks like they even have some kind of weird sonic cannon they have there ready to go. Maybe it's that weird brown noise thing. But
yeah, they've been using this sonic cannon almost every night. And it's almost unbearable when they turn that thing on. Even when you're watching it through live stream, you almost want to take your headphones off or turn your audio down. It's that bad. And they're using it all, man. They're using flashbang grenades. They're using tear gas. They're using rubber bullets, wood pellets, all the psychological factors. And guess what? these people are standing firm. They're not going to take it anymore.
But what about the reverse psychological factor of Anonymous going to out you and your information and your name and your social? I mean, you've now been reduced to what you are. You're a public servant. You're at the whim of this system. And look at what people can do to exploit you for what you thought was just doing your job. But you know what? You took it too far, and you've allowed oppression to go, and now you've become tyrannical. And the only thing left to do, because violence would never work against a greater armed force, is these psychological psyops. They have to do it against these guys because they're regular guys like me and you, and they need to be woken up one way or another. And it's sad to say, but they need to feel vulnerable too if they're making other people feel vulnerable.
Yeah, man, and you know, in certain cases, you got to fight fire with fire. But the thing that has been very, very optimistic for me is the preemptive writing, which basically is the next sign of the writing on the wall that is saying people are absolutely fed up with this shit. They're done with this system, right? B, the citizen media factor, where all these dudes are jumping on live stream, they're jumping on Vine, they're jumping on Twitter, they're jumping on Facebook, and they're posting out what's actually happening. That's key, because then that takes out the whole corporate media factor on this thing, because then they can't spin it, because all they have is this raw video. And they can't spin it to their... Yeah, they try. Of course, Fox News is trying to. Fox News is trying to paint Mike Brown as some kind of thug. And yeah, it's working in those 68-year-old people that watch Fox News. But that's fine. That's a small portion of the population. They're completely ineffective. They don't have any kind of networking ability. They don't have any kind of quote-unquote reach. And when it comes down to it, the 68-year-old dudes aren't going to get off their asses and go fight in the streets when it comes down to it. So I'm not worried about Fox News and their propaganda, because it's all for the old people that don't do shit anymore, you know. And that, like you said, they're all pensioners, or they're living with their kids, and their kids know what the hell's going on. Their grandkids sure as hell know what's going on. A lot of their grandkids are probably listening to this show right now. So I'm not worried about that so much, because now I see what's going on over there, and the citizen media is gone up to the next level through this Ferguson thing. The awareness of the police state has gone up to the next level in this Ferguson thing, and the numbers are going to be astonishingly high after this. And after this, I can see a bunch of communities getting rid of their MRAPs after seeing what's going on over here. So those things have left me very, very optimistic. The preemptive rioting basically means that people are so tired of what's going on, they're not even waiting for the verdict anymore. I mean, if you look back and if you look at what happened with the Rodney King riots, it was after the cops got acquitted, even though they blatantly beat the hell out of the guy. And that was one of the first instances of citizen journalism being used for police accountability. If you remember, that's one of the first times that police ever got caught on camera beating somebody. And that was very, very bad back then. Back then, they waited for the verdict. And when the verdict came in and the cops got acquitted, then they were like, oh, hell no, that's fucking, they went too far this time. But here in Ferguson, what we're seeing is a preemptive rioting, preemptive civil unrest, which means that we've now gone to the next level. We are now at the point where we're not even going to wait around to see the proof of these guys doing wrong. They've been doing wrong for so damn long that we're going to preemptively say, hell no, we've had enough.
We're tuning out the corporate media that's always 4 days behind, and we're listening to the the analysis of individuals that are independent of what we have available, which is just as good as anything that corporate media can do now, because there's more people on the ground, more people posting, and we get the same access. So people had it figured out 4 days before anybody broke this story, and then they had to backtrack and try to figure out, oh, he was this robbery suspect, and oh, we can maybe portray him as a th-. It was too late, though. It was way too late. They didn't release the guy's name, and they let another guy kind of hang out to dry that got, you know, implicated. So they dropped the ball, man, and this is what happened.
Exactly, man. And the witness accounts seem to corroborate what's going on with the autopsy, the independent autopsy. Thank you guys for tuning in. Make sure you catch us on Wednesday. Stay vigilant. Keep the TV off, man. Stay on the internet. Stay on Twitter and live stream, and keep an eye on what's going on over there. And get involved in your community. Join the action. Join the protest. You guys want to do the stereo.